You know, it's so easy when you get a sponsor for the show and you use their services. And I do. It's Karen Locker's Solutions for E-Commerce. Solutionsforecommerce.com/momentum will get you 10% off right now. I've been using her for, I guess it's been a year and change since I first interviewed her. Hired her pretty much right after the show because I'm like, I need everything you're talking about. I've got problems with stranded inventory. And guess what? I had lots of problems with stranded inventory last year as the restrictions were coming through. Boom, she'd fix it. If there's an issue with the photo, fixed. All that kind of stuff. I get refunds now. They just show up. Hey, you know, we're replying to your cases. Here's your refund. My feedback. I don't have to fix my own feedback anymore. It's automatically done. And I see the notes coming through. I still once in a while get an email from Amazon saying, hey, you have some stranded inventory. I send it to her. And most of the time, it's already been dealt with and fixed. But let me tell you, being a single operator, my wife and I, this just takes so much off our plates. I can't say enough about it. It's Solutions for E-Commerce, the number four, solutionsforecommerce.com/momentum to get 10% off her services. Be sure you tell her I sent you, solutionsforecommerce.com.
Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 179, Elizabeth Thompson. You know, let me just tell you right up front, audio issues. We kind of step on each other, can't help it. There's a delay, there was a lag, it was something, but I love the content, so guess what? I kept it. This is a very smart person and very impressive. She's got a large seven-figure business, and she has done it the hard way. I mean, she is put her head down and did the work. Very, very disciplined, very organized. But again, you know, it's not a perfect way to get there. I don't know that there is a perfect way to get there. And I think Elizabeth will tell you the same thing. It's life is messy sometimes. And her life has been messy. And it's been choices, positive choices that they've done as a couple. And I think I really appreciate that. And it was a really good interview. Really impressed with what she's been able to do. It's very impressive. Let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. And I'm very excited about tonight's guest, Elizabeth Thompson. Hey, welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Stephen.
We are having just a little bit of a lag issue in our voices, so we're going to intentionally pause a little bit in between questions, just try to let that system work its way out. You know, it's interesting. I assume you were affected by Amazon's big shutdown on the East Coast of their service on one of the systems that you use. Is that correct?
Are you talking about yesterday?
Yeah.
Yes. We basically could not ship anything yesterday, and we had done a very large purchases on Thursday and Friday of last week. And so we just had to pivot and work on only prepping yesterday. And I just kept thanking myself that it was not December.
It's as the more reliant we become on these things, I mean, these are real, they're scary, right? A little bit. If you got people to pay and they're standing around now doing things that you're not going to get paid for an additional day at least, or whatever it takes to get caught up.
Exactly. And I also had shipped a lot of product to a prep center. So I had product in two locations that was being affected by not being able to be shipped in. Yeah, expediently.
You know, and I'm a ScanPower user, and ScanPower was down too. I mean, so it was a whole myriad of things that were affected, right? And it's interesting to see how reliant we have become on this stuff.
Yes, I try to always look at the bright side. And one thing I did think about yesterday, I also use ScanPower both for my app and also for our listing process. And I was thankful that we weren't out shopping yesterday.
Yeah.
Because the apps weren't even working to scan. And since I'm 99.9% retail arbitrage, I was thankful that we at least had something in the warehouse that we could prep and that we had didn't have to be reliant on shopping or shipping yesterday.
That's a great way to look at it. I mean, I think that's a very smart move. Okay, so you are a large, so I'll call you the mega seller. Everybody hates that term. Too bad it's mine. And you have scaled a very large business. How did, you know, I mean, was this, you've been trained professionally to be this big Amazon e-commerce seller? Or is this a natural ability, or is it a series of events that started when you were younger to get you to this place in your life?
I would say it's a series of events. My father was an entrepreneur also. And so I worked for him when I was in high school. And so I saw a little bit of the side of, you know, what it was like to own your own business. However, he encouraged me not to be an entrepreneur.
Whoa, hold on a second. Hold on. So you saw the good and the bad in him, right? I mean, it wasn't all roses. His business, or did he make you believe it was roses?
No, it seemed to be roses and when I looked at it. I think he knew how hard it was to be an entrepreneur.
But, you know, think about this. Hold on. Think about this, though. You've seen yourself that this is a challenge, right? I mean, you've run into challenge. You're very smart. You're very talented. But you've run into challenges, most of them outside of your control. He had to be running. I don't know what his business was, but logically, he protected you maybe. And he didn't want you to have that. And I mean, as a dad, I appreciate it. Trust me, I get that. And maybe he didn't want you to work so hard, but really, he probably didn't want you to see that, you know, it's not all roses, that sometimes it does stink. Am I stretching it?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I think that that's what it is. I think that he had a career before he left his, he was working for General Electric and he left GE to basically be a contractor for GE. And so I think that he looked back on what if I had stayed at GE, where would I be now? But then I always would say to him, but what if you hadn't? You would have never known that you could succeed on your own. And so I think that he had both perspectives of what having a career with a large company and also working for himself.
Did he appear happier in one versus the other, looking back? I mean, it's kind of hard, probably, because you always remember him being happy. But I mean, realistically, was he a better person in one role versus the other?
I think he probably was. I've never thought about that, but I think that he probably was happier working for himself than having the stress of working for a large company.
That's important.
But I think that because, you know, having to have the specific hours and I remember him working weekends a lot when I was younger and going to work with him on Saturdays. And I don't really remember that very much from when he was working for himself.
Do you think that one of the reasons that he left that, you know, good job, I mean, geez, an amazing company, was so he wouldn't miss your weekends with you guys? And as a doting father, I mean, that'd be pretty cool. That would say a lot about him.
I think he just had the opportunity and he took it. I don't know if it was specifically was work. It could have been because he used to travel internationally a lot. So that probably, you know, is a big factor in the fact that he didn't like to travel. And so I think that might have been a big factor in knowing that he wouldn't have to travel anymore if he started to work for himself.
Well, where I'm going with it is because you're an independent entrepreneur now and you get to choose what you do with your kids. And I just wonder if that really kind of rubbed off, because it's a much cooler place for you, I assume, you know, and I'm sure there are bad days because they're kids, right? I mean, like every other. But generally speaking, I mean, you have choices that you've created by doing all this. I mean, to me, that's a very cool thing. And the fact that you could do it if your father did the same thing and maybe it just rubbed off on you. That's where I'm reaching and I'm stretching on it. Yeah. But it makes me wonder when I see that. And I sit back and I say to myself, huh. Because I've heard most people who leave a very responsible corporate job are much happier when they start doing things for themselves. Not everybody's cut out for that. But the ones that had some success, there's like a relief in almost.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that he probably overall was happier, you know, leaving the corporate field. But he's still, you know, I think everyone looks back and thinks, you know, what you could have done differently. Yeah. But yeah, so.
Okay, well, so, may I ask one more question before we go forward? Because what would you encourage your kids today, knowing what he was, knowing what you are? Have you thought that far out yet?
I have a 13-year-old son who is very interested in my business, and I can already foresee him wanting to be involved in the business.
Okay.
On a long-term basis. My daughter who's 11, I could see her not really being all that interested in working for herself. I would encourage them for sure to be entrepreneurs because of the work-life balance and not having to work for someone for a specific set of hours. You can make up your own schedule. That to me is just the number one thing of being an entrepreneur, is being able to do what you want to do when you want to do it.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. There's that lag. I apologize again. I'm sorry.
It's okay. But this not having to ask your boss if you can take off 2 hours to take your child to the doctor, or not having to, you know, ask your boss if you can take off a day to go on a field trip. I'm going on a field trip with my daughter next week. I didn't have to ask anyone if I could do that.
Yeah, I was going to say, has that happened to you? And of course, you just answered the question before. I didn't even need to ask it. So that has happened to you where there have been times where you're just like, you know what? I need to be with my son or my daughter, period. And that's my precedent. And guess what? I'm in charge, so I can make that decision. I don't have to answer to anybody.
Exactly. It happens with having 3 children. It happens, I feel, almost on a daily basis. I mean, I can pick my kids up from school. I can go have lunch with them. I can, you know, all the things that I feel like I missed when I worked in the corporate world. I can do those things. And yeah, so that's kind of where I'm going with that.
I love it. I love it. It's a great story because, you know, it's so intentional. To me, you know, you did have a good job and a good career, and yet you're so intentional about it. Okay, so let's. I interrupted your story long enough. So you were working for your dad, and when you were in high school, he was encouraging you not to go in to be an entrepreneur, to go to college to be. What did he want you to be?
I might be saying that wrong. I wouldn't say. I think he was just encouraging me to go to college. Okay. And have a career.
Okay.
I don't think I wouldn't say he ever sat me down and said, hey, you shouldn't apply for these positions. You should really try to do something on your own. So I went to college. When I got out of college, my first job was I worked for General Electric.
And, whoa, you're back. It's back full circle.
Yeah. Exactly. So, the crazy part is, my parents actually met and married in New York City, and that's where my dad was working for GE. He was up in New York, and, he got transferred down to Louisville, Kentucky, where GE Appliances is headquartered before I was born. And then my first job working for GE was in New York City. So I got moved up to New York to work for GE Capital, for my very first job. My first corporate career.
That's funny though. So back and forth, and it's almost like it was meant to be. What did he say when you said, "Hey, I got a job with GE"?
He was extremely happy. He was very proud of me. Because he knew the potential that I had with working for GE. I worked mainly finance. I ended up going through General Electric's financial management program, which is a 2-year-long training program within GE. So I actually ended up working in New York City for about a year and a half. And then I got moved down to Cincinnati, Ohio. I work for GE Aircraft Engines and GE Capital in Cincinnati. And then once I finished the program, the training program with GE, I actually moved and started back to Louisville after I got married in between then. And I started working for GE Appliances. So I actually ended up being at GE Appliances, you know, also for about a year and a half.
And so at this point, you're in the career path, you're on the executive track. I mean, you know, they don't put dumb people through those courses and spend all that money in training. There's high potential there and they're moving you around. They clearly see a future for you. At that point, were you also seeing that this is my future? I can see myself being, you know, the CEO of GE one day. I mean, that's the mindset you get. I mean, you know, I've done it. Or was there something longing?
Yes and no. I didn't like what I saw in terms of the amount of hours that some people put into their jobs. And so that did not appeal to me. It didn't appeal to me that people would work until 9 o'clock at night. At the time when I left GE, my son was 11 months old. And so it was after I had my son was when I started thinking, you know, I might just want to kind of stay in the middle track and not continue moving up the ladder, because I did not see myself being able to handle a really high level corporate job and have children. That was a challenge.
How does that feel? Because as a guy, you know, and I think back to my career, and, you know, I was fortunate. My wife stayed home for the first, I think, 5 years of both of our boys. And so, and I don't want to say I took advantage of it. I don't mean it that way. That was the sacrifice she gave, right? And I worked, but I put in those hours and we had incredible success. But looking back, it came at a cost, you know, and I think back to some of the things that I missed and, you know, always on a trip, always traveling, always doing this and moving and making more money and all that kind of jazz. But it does seem to come at a cost. Looking back, because you made a choice, any regrets?
Regrets in terms of
that you didn't stick with it and didn't stay and put your kids with the nanny and do all the stuff that some of the really successful, incredibly successful people who are talented like yourself. Any regrets?
No. I think my only regrets would be not jumping onto the Amazon full-time faster.
That's fine.
It was very, very scary. Yeah, it was very scary when I finally did take that leap. And now I look back at some of my friends who are full-time Amazon sellers that started when they were 21, 22 years old. And that would probably be the only regret, but it really Amazon didn't really start
right
until I was even leaving. I mean, the whole FBA thing, that pretty much didn't start until after I left GE anyways. So yeah, that would be.
Well, okay. So you decided to leave. You got a little baby, 11 months old. You decide to leave. Now, were you planning to go home and just sit home, or were you saying, hey, I want to do something on the side? How soon did you start selling on eBay after that point?
Okay. So when I was at GE Appliances, during the time GE Appliances and GE merged into one company. And so they were doing a lot of layoffs. And also, I was working actually on the Walmart account for GE Appliances. We were selling large appliances inside Walmart stores. It was a beta program.
Mm-hmm.
And Walmart thought that they knew how to sell large appliances better than GE did. And so they were dictating to GE what, you know, the prices had to be and so on and so forth. And basically it just didn't work out. And Walmart decided that they no longer wanted to sell large appliances inside their stores. So I say this about the merge between GE Appliances and GE Lighting, and then we lost the account with Walmart. So basically there was not a position for me at GE Appliances anymore. So I was told that I could move basically anywhere in the country I would want to, that they would support me trying to find another job with GE. My husband was in school in Louisville, and we had an 11-month-old and my parents lived in Louisville, and so they were helping us with our. It just didn't feel right to move. So I figured, okay, well, I'm going to just try to stay at home with him, you know, for a year and see what happens. And so that's what led me into selling on eBay.
And that's a hard transition for somebody like yourself, who's been the corporate person and been moving up and doing all these things. And let's face it, right? You had a tremendous amount of success. Now, all of a sudden, to turn it off. Now, I know as a mom, that's a different story. But I mean, it still must have been tough to turn that off, because you've been trained a certain way, right? You have, you know, that's the way it is. How did you adjust to that, or were you able just to turn it off?
Yes, we were just able to turn it off. That's a good question.
Because it's hard. I don't know if I could turn it off. I've been doing this forever. I've not been able to turn it off. I mean, I'm still working full time, but I mean, I don't know. I think this is a personal question for me, because I think about those things, because I'm so set in my ways with, you know, when it comes to business. I don't know that I could turn it off. Mm-hmm.
We definitely struggled, I would say, in terms of just, you know, being, you know, paycheck to paycheck. I did apply for unemployment during that time, because I could, and I mean, you know, I was able to do that because of the way that, you know, and so, I mean, yeah, I did do that. So I think that lasted for 6 months. And then I also was doing some contract work for my previous GE employer from New York. I was doing some stuff on the side for them through a temp agency, just different spreadsheets and calculations and the whatnot for her while I was doing that too. So that's, and then, yeah.
And so then you decide, hey, well, I shouldn't lead you there. You got to tell me, is that when eBay started, or did you have something in between?
Okay, so that's when eBay started. So that was 2006,
which is a long time ago, by the way. That's a long time selling. I mean, that's a lot of experience you got there.
Thanks. Actually, let me step one foot back. There was, I don't even know if it's in existence anymore, but there was a website called half.com, and I started selling my husband's old textbooks on half.com before I started selling on eBay. So that, and then I was buying his current textbooks on there too. So I did start, that would be my first, selling experience online. It would have been his textbooks. Then I moved on to eBay. What happened was I was an extreme couponer. No longer am, I just do not have the time for it. But back then I was getting, you know, all groceries for free. Basically everything we needed was, I was paying $2, you know, at the grocery store for $100 worth of groceries. So I would go to Target with my son, he's in the buggy, and we would just make our little Target clearance run, just looking for things that were good deals on the Target clearance end caps. And I would just look at things and I would say, wow, that's a really good deal. But I don't need that. And then one day I was looking at the end cap and I said, I don't need that, but somebody does. And so I just started buying things that were like 75% off at Target on clearance. And I learned how to read the Target clearance tags. And that's when I started selling things on eBay. Another piece of that is that my husband was working for FedEx and as a sort manager for the third shift. And so he was able to ship anything within the entire United States, including Hawaii and Puerto Rico, for $3. Oh. So I could buy high chairs on 75% off and use his employee benefit and ship it for $3 anywhere. So that is how I got started selling on eBay. I mean, I was selling maybe 10 items a week. I remember the very first item I sold on eBay was a little bouncy seat. So, and I remember seeing the order come through and I was like, it actually sold.
Wow.
So that how I got started selling on eBay.
Let me pause you there a second, because I'm interested in the $3 shipping thing. So that little bouncy seat that came in a box, right, was brand new. Did you have to rebox it, or were you able to ship it existing in that packaging?
I don't remember. Probably I would have to say I probably shipped it in the same box.
Okay.
It came in and just slapped a label.
Yeah, you just slapped a $3 label. Uh-huh. Well, your cost, a $3 label on this baby, and you just sent it out. So yeah. Competitively, you had, you know, you could almost offer free shipping. I mean, you really had a big advantage there. I mean, that's a big advantage because that, you know, to ship that same product, and I understand that was years ago, it would be cheaper than what it is now, but it's still a big competitive advantage. That's awesome. I love it.
Yes, it was. And so by the time we started selling more and more, he would take the van to work and he would always, and another thing, he could bring them with him to work. Oh. So when he would leave for work, when he would leave for work that day, if I had three packages ready to go or however many it was, he could just take them to work with him, because he could put them right on the belt as soon as he got to work to his shift. So that was another advantage too, was him working for FedEx.
How did you get the time out to go shopping? Or were you, you had one kid with you at that time still?
Just one. Yeah.
Okay. So just
because
one.
We had nothing to do. Yeah. Okay. So, because I was staying home with him. And so, I mean, like I said, I was doing a very little bit of contract work on the side for, my previous employer. But yeah, I mean, I was a mom at that time. I was just doing a very, very little bit of work the temp thing. That's how I got the online selling bug, was through that experience.
And in your prime, and at how many years did you do eBay heavy?
Okay. So I did eBay for about a year and a half. By that time I had that's when we had our second child. And okay. So she's 11 now. So when she was 11 months old, we're still doing eBay, but we decided that I needed to go back to work. The bills were piling up, and we just decided that, not piling up, but it was just hard.
Right, sure.
And so my husband actually at that time, a couple months before that, he had left FedEx to work for a nonprofit, local nonprofit here in Louisville. For insurance reasons, I decided that I was going to go back to work. And I was employable. I had a college degree, had my experience with GE. And so I went back to work when my daughter was 11 months old. So we had, I guess, a 3-year-old and an 11-month-old at the time. I was still selling, we were still selling on eBay, but sporadically. We were doing a little bit during like Q4, we'd pick up a little bit more and we'd sell, we'd find out the Cars movie was out at the time. So we were selling the die-cast cars on eBay. That's one thing I remember about from selling back then, were those items.
Okay. And so you decide to go back to work. The kids going into daycare. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get too personal. I mean, no judgment.
Okay.
I mean, I get it. My two granddaughters are in daycare. So, so the kids are in daycare. You get a job. You start working. And how long did that last?
So yes, the kids were in daycare. They both, and it was, that was hard for the 11-month-old, especially because she had never been in daycare. But yes. And so I went to work for Humana. I already have my Six Sigma, green belt from my experience at GE, but I went directly into Humana's program to become a Six Sigma black belt. And so I was doing process engineering for Humana, which that means basically looking at different processes within the company and figuring out how those could be streamlined to be more efficient. I had a really good job with Humana. but I still had the online selling bug because I liked it. Just, it was fun and it was interesting. So I was about, I can't remember exactly when it was, but it was, like where I was in my career with Humana, I'd only been there for a couple months, but Webkinz came out.
Ah.
And I'm not sure if you've ever heard Webkinz.
Oh, I know exactly who they are. Yeah.
Have you heard of Webkinz?
Sure.
Okay. Sure. So basically for those of you who don't know, it's, they were like the Thai beanie baby craze, but there was an online game associated with these little stuffed animals. They came with a code attached to them and kids could use the code to go online and play with their animal in the different games that they had online. So they were really hard to find. There was limits on them. The only place I knew to buy them were at Walt was at Hallmark, or a lot of gift shops. You can get them at hospital gift shops, state park gift shops, those kind of things. That is when I started selling on Amazon. My very first sales on Amazon were, I was in a couple different forums. This is before Facebook groups. I was in a paid forum. It was all basically moms or ladies who were selling on eBay. And that's when I heard about Webkinz. And so, so I started selling Webkinz MF only on Amazon. And that was April of 2007 is when I started selling Webkinz.
And were you, I mean, when you got the bug and you started having some success, and I mean, because it's impressive that you realize all the other kind of little designer places that you can sell those kind of things. Now you know that, like we all do, right? Anybody who's done any wholesale, you'll see it. But it's impressive. You realize that the hospital gift shops and all those small little unusual places are the ones that store that stuff. And that's probably a treasure trove. Did you start chasing product at that point?
Yes, I did. On my lunch hour, I would take my coworker with me and we would go to Hallmark, and there was like a limit of 2 per style. So that way I could get 4 per style. I had a huge table in my basement, just set up with all the Webkinz that you could imagine. My best sale on Webkinz, I still remember it. I found it, at a local, it was a state park in Kentucky. I was calling all the different state park gift shops. I can't remember which one it was, but they had the mini Webkinz Black Bear, and it probably was $8. I don't remember, but I had them ship it to me and I sold it for $199.
Wow.
That's
pretty cutting edge that you had them ship it to you. That's pretty, I mean, I just never would think that a state park would do such a thing. Did you have to convince them?
No, I can't remember how many they had, but I don't remember them having, I can't remember it being like more than like 10 of various ones. And so I just asked, if I could just pay for the shipping, and they were fine with it.
That's awesome.
Those are the only ones I remember. Yeah. Those are the only ones I remember having shipped to me. I do remember finding a decent supply of them, at a couple of local hospitals that I was able to purchase them from. And we drove, my husband and I drove to a really small gift shop at a town that was about 30 minutes away from here, that where we also were able to get a good stockpile of them also from there. But again, this was just MF. I had not gotten into the world of FBA yet.
Yeah. 2008, it's just getting started FBA, right? So you would have been very, very early to jump in at that point. All right, let's do this. Let's take a break, because I'm now fascinated, because here it is, somebody who's got another career, it sounded like a more amazing job than the GE job, but who's spending her lunch rather than, chilling and relaxing, chasing Webkinz across the state. And somehow you've converted this into a large seven-figure business on Amazon. I mean, you got to help me make the connection how you were able to do that. Let's take a break. We'll be right back. Are you looking for inventory this time of year? I have just the answer. It's called The List. Yep, that's it. The List. It's a premium sourcing service brought to you by Andy Slammons, where you get quality, actionable inventory from real sellers. These are $1 million-plus sellers who bring you the finds in real time. Oh, and by the way, they're buying them themselves. Bring your business to the next level with The List. There are a few openings, but it's capped at 100, and they're so close, but you still can get in if you sign up now at thelistishere.com. Thelistishere.com. Oh, and make sure you tell Andy I sent you. I apologize for the audio, but, it's good stuff because, again, it's messy. It's just not perfect. Things happen. Life happens. Companies expect things. They want you to do things for their best interest. And I understand that that's what their goal is, to make money, right? But that doesn't necessarily include you and what's best for you. And, little kids come along, and what do you do? How do you handle that? And you've got to make choices. And those who go to work and stay working, there's nothing wrong with that. That's their choice. That's right for them. it wasn't right for Elizabeth and her husband. And I think that that's what's so powerful. I hope someone listening to this today, this is the permission for what you've been thinking about, something that's been weighing heavy on your heart. This might be the thing that pushes you there. I know it's helped me, and I'll be talking about that pretty soon. It's really strong. Let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back, and we're talking with the Webkin expert at the time, Elizabeth Thompson. And it is a neat story because, I mean, again, you know, as I sit here and think about, you know, that's pretty smart that you could figure out that those things were sold at, you know, gift shops, hospital gift shops. So everybody always passes on those, and they still have stuff like that. But to know that state parks, and then to convince them to ship them to me is a very cool story. I just think of any government, you know, oh, the rules say, you know, manual on page 6,738, subparagraph B, no, we are not allowed to do that, you know? And so you were able to convince them. I think that's a pretty cool story. So somehow you start converting to FBA. Were you still working when you converted to FBA, or were you out of corporate world?
No, I did not leave my corporate job until February of 2011. So I just continued from 2007 to 2011. I just continued to slowly grow the FBA business. It was just a scary, scary step to take to leave the every other week paycheck to jumping in with, you know, 2 feet and working for myself. It was very scary. It was just very scary. So in 2008, I was still working as a full time and just selling here and there, very small things. I think I had like maybe 100 sales a month at the most. But my husband was on board for December sales. So in December we went absolutely in 2007 and 2008 on Amazon doing all MF. And I remember being at my desk in 2008 and we had like 30 orders we were having to fulfill that night after our kids went to bed, mm-hmm. and then bring them up to the post office. And I remember shutting down my sales, putting them on vacation mode in the middle of December, because I knew I was not going to be able to be up all night long shipping these orders out. So that's where we were up until 2008. So in January 2009 is when I decided to ship everything I had left over that hadn't sold MF in 2008. And try out FBA. Now, the problem with that, go ahead. Did you have a question?
You know, because you were the bottleneck. You're realizing you're the bottleneck because you have a big job and you can't take in like that. You're the pinch point, right? So you're looking for a way out of this pinch point, and you thought FBA was going to be the answer, or at least try it.
Correct.
Okay.
If you were selling in the toy category on Amazon, to become buy box eligible, you had to be selling on the professional selling plan platform. They have different platforms. And so if you were not on the right platform, you were not buy box eligible. They had two sections of sellers for every item. And it would be at the top would be called featured merchants. And at the bottom would be called non-featured merchants. I was a non-featured merchant. So the only way for people to buy from me was to click through to the page behind the buy box. And everyone in the buy box would be selling for higher prices, and the non-featured merchants to compete, we'd have to have much lower prices. So to become buy box eligible, I had to completely basically shut down my old Amazon account and start all the way over from scratch. In January 2009, which also meant giving up daily payouts and going to an every 2 week payout system with Amazon. So it just continued to grow. And by the time, once I realized how easy FBA was compared to shipping my own orders, I just kept moving forward, with continuing to sell, send product into Amazon. We would buy stuff just on the weekends. It was still was not a big business. I remember someone telling me that they had 30 orders a day, and I looked up to her thinking, oh my gosh, 30 orders a day. It just seemed to me unfathomable that someone could get that many orders in a day in the middle of March via FBA.
And now you get them in an hour. So thinking back, I mean, it's just funny. No, because it's true. I mean, it is, I always call them self-imposed boundaries, right? Because that's what you knew. You'd be like, well, you know, 30 orders on eBay or 30 orders MF on Amazon is enormous, right? And that's a, wow, you hit the big cheat.
Yeah.
But those are the self-imposed boundaries. And then once you start expanding them, it really does open up your mind. So that was 2009. You're still working full time. You're out in the weekends. Your husband's helping you source, I take it?
Yeah, but it was nothing like sourcing trips like I go on now.
Right. So is this sourcing and you're prepping and that kind of thing? Yeah.
We would do the big Target toy clearance sales that would happen in January and July, and ship a big shipment of toys in. And whenever we would find like good sales, usually clearance, that's when we would ship it in. It was only toys too.
Okay, so you're in that category. As I'm sitting here thinking about this, now this is 2006, you're in 2009, 3 years. You have to be relatively patient. Are you a patient person by nature?
Not at all.
So it's interesting to me. I would have said that. My time with you. I would have said, I would bet you she's not. She's like, hey, let's get it done. Let's move forward. That's probably that training all your life, right? But it's just interesting to me that you are patient here, throughout this period of time. It's not like you went all in and you're like, oh, I got to go crazy. Got to go crazy. That's pretty cool. So now you're in 2009. Things are rocking along. What happens?
Well, just to speak to what you just said, I still looked at this as a hobby. It did not, it was just something to do on the side. It never still in my mind did I think that in 2017 I would be running my own warehouse. I mean, it was not even in my mind that I even was thinking about leaving the corporate world. And so, yeah, go ahead.
No, I like it. I mean, I like where you're going with it, because you're saying, hey, contextually, that's probably where that patience was. Because as you say, it was just a hobby. It wasn't anything more than that. You didn't anticipate it being more than that. Did you not know that it could be more than that, maybe?
No, I didn't. Okay. I did not know that at all, that this could be something that I could do full time. I didn't know.
Okay.
Didn't even think about that being a possibility. We were more in maintenance mode from like January through October. And then October would roll around both in 2009, 2010. And that's when we would start, okay, well, what are the hot toys going to be? And, how are we going to let's just get the toys in for December, because that was our focus, was just getting a bunch of sales in December, being able to pay off our cars or being able to pay off a student loan early. And so that was our focus. We were on the track to be debt free, which we were able to do. And basically we would use those big chunks of money we would get in December and pay off another bill. So that was our focus, was, okay, what can we do to make our, that was our focus, was paying off big chunks of money, like my college loan, our cars, going to Disney World, those kind of things. It was more fun money. And also, so it still was not the focus.
I like the fact that you had a side hustle and that's the way you were treating it, but it had a purpose, right? So, hey, we got another one down. Everybody realizes they put their head down, do the work, and you had a plan for that money one way or another. And a trip to Disney is a plan, right? So any one of those things are good plans. And I suggest that to everyone today, that that's a great way to start these kind of businesses. A, you'll find out whether you'll like it or not, right? Without going all in. Without giving up that future, if that's what you want. And you'll figure out which one you kind of like. So at this point, Were you struggling because you still had that bug? Was this scratching the itch or just surface scratching the itch?
No, it became a struggle. It was 2010. It was fall of 2010 was when it really, I was realizing that Amazon was becoming much bigger than I ever anticipated it could become while working full time and now having two children who were, I guess, 6 and 4, maybe. I went to my boss and I asked him if I could start working 8:30 to 2:30 every day. I told him it was because I wanted to be able to pick my kids up from school and just have more time at home. And which it was, that was part of, it was partly true, but he had no clue I was doing this Amazon thing on the side. Mm. My real intent was to see, can I really do this Amazon thing in the afternoons? It was more of a way for me to take a little bit of our money, my salary away, and see if I could, you know, substitute that with more Amazon sales.
Did you give yourself a time frame? Did you say, hey, I'm going to try this for 6 months in your mind? I mean, I'm sure you didn't explain to him. Were you like, hey, let me see what I could do for 6 months or a year? Or what were you thinking?
No, I wasn't given that option. What happened was they came to me about 6 months later, 4 or 6 months later, and said, this isn't working. I think they had other pushback back from other people asking, why is she allowed to, I think they're getting questions about why I was at the level I was at in the company and being allowed to work, a different schedule. And so they told me that I had to come back full time, back to regular 9 to 5. And so went to my husband, we talked about it, and we just decided, no, it's time. If I'm going to do it, it was time to do it now. So I went back to them. I said, well, what if I tell you no? You know, what if I say no? They said, well, then basically we're going to have you sign a separation agreement with the company. So I said, well, I guess I'm going to sign a separation agreement with the company. So that's what I did. Ask me the question.
Well, no, I think that you got a severance agreement. And so rather than quitting, there's a pro tip, right? Rather than quitting, you let them eliminate your position with them. And you sign one of those little waivers. You're not going to sue them and all that kind of jazz. And they give you X, right?
Yes, exactly. So, yeah. And this was the same year that the 1099-K came into effect, where you had to, you know, start. 2011 was the very first year 1099-K came into effect. So I knew I had to get all my ducks in a row and, you know, incorporate the company and, you know, make it really official now. So that's what I focused on then. So I left the corporate world, and I haven't really looked back since. Just continued to grow year over year, probably, you know, between 25% to 50% every year since then.
And you know, I don't want to downplay this. You have a large scale operation now. You've got, you know, 6 other people working with you. You've really created a large business. And I guess when we started the talk, we talked about whether this was just, you know, did it evolve from something? All these things that have happened prior looks to be that they prepared you for this moment. I mean, do you feel that way now looking at it, that all those little experiences, all those, you know, that corporate training, all that formal stuff allows you to manage? Because you got a lot of spinning plates.
Yes, especially with my knowledge with Excel, that, you know, I got all of that from the corporate world. I use Excel for pretty much just about everything I do. And then the process engineering background with Six Sigma. I could do better with my own processes. I think I don't have time to map them out to find out where the bottlenecks are, but bottleneck probably is still me. I don't regret working in the corporate world. I liked it. I like having that experience to compare to what I'm doing now, because I think also if I hadn't have done that, then I wouldn't know how good I have it in working for myself.
Yeah. You have the appreciation because you have context, right? That's a big deal. That's a big deal. And so is your husband involved in the business?
Yes. He still works full time. And so that is part of it that people have to realize that I don't know if I would have felt as comfortable as I did if he wasn't working full time, because he carries the insurance, he gets all the benefits. You know, if I wasn't saving in my 401k until this past year. So I took a 4-year hiatus and saving for my retirement plan. I mean, I did it with my previous corporate jobs, but I stopped. And so, you know, he was able to continue that with his job. So you have to look at it in terms of, if you're single or if, the other person's also an entrepreneur, then you have to think about it in terms of, how am I going to pay for the health insurance? And there's a lot of questions that I didn't have to consider, scenarios I didn't have to consider, because he was able to have all that with his position. Okay. So you asked me if he helps with the business. Yes, he does. He only likes to shop. He doesn't like to do anything else. So, on the weekends he might go shopping with me, or he might take off a couple of days from work and go shopping with me. But he does, that's the only thing he likes to do. He likes to do the retail arbitrage and drop off the bags and have our employees do all the other work, but that's all he does.
You know, the other thing that you said, the fact that, he was working and all that, but boy, you guys have both made sacrifices on, let's face it, he has the responsibility, that added burden of responsibility of, now I've got to do this job right. I've got to do this right because, hey, I've got to provide for my family these extra things because our B plan, which was Elizabeth and her job, is not there anymore. So we need to be, this piece of our life has to be right, so this other piece we can invest in. And that's a strong marriage and that's a strong conversation. But boy, when you have both of you on the same page, man, there's just no stopping you, right? I mean, would you say, is this fair, that a lot of your success is because of him helping you be successful in his own way?
Not only that, but he is the one who encouraged me he was encouraging me even before it happened to just go ahead and quit, because I think he saw the potential that I didn't see. So yes, definitely it would be due to him encouraging me to go ahead and move forward with trying it. Because he would tell me, he was like, you're employable. You can find a job. If this doesn't work out, you can go back to the corporate world. But if you don't try it, you're never going to know. Definitely he was my encouragement.
That's just awesome, because as I sit and think about that, I've had a few people, I've seen people post things, and I'm sure you have too, where they're like, my significant other doesn't understand what I do and he belittles it, or she, and I don't know if I should do it, and they just tell me to give it up and all the rest of that jazz. I don't think I'd want to be in that kind of relationship and bring the turmoil of an entrepreneur position, because let's face it, there's up and down every hour, unfortunately some days. And so to bring that into it with that negative vibe and almost setting you up for failure, I don't think that's a good mix. And I think those are the people that should pass on this. And really, I mean, if they're staying in that relationship and that's their thing, they really should maybe choose a different avenue. What's your feeling on that?
Yeah, he never once has ever discouraged me anything to do with Amazon. If anything, he has encouraged me to, go faster than I'm even comfortable with. So yeah, I'm very fortunate for that.
That's awesome. So you are, I think the consummate, the perfect example of a stay-at-home mom, went back to work, back and forth in the career, trying to figure it out, and has figured out how to make, what I would say is a lifestyle business for your lifestyle and your family's lifestyle. Can you encourage other significant others, and it doesn't have to just be moms, can you give some encouragement to them to let them know that there is another opportunity outside of, because the things that you missed, you didn't miss, you have, you were able to gain that back and more so. Like you said, you're going on a school class trip next week, right? Boom, you're going.
Yes.
So can you give us some encouragement to those people listening?
I think if anyone has at this point in their game that they've figured out Amazon and they understand the business, that I still think you need to have savings. I wouldn't say that you can just jump into it right away. I would feel like I would encourage someone to have money in the bank to where they can still pay the bills while they're growing the business. But my encouragement would be to realize that it can be done, especially if you already have one foot in to the Amazon world. I think I told you earlier, the best part is the fact that I can do what I want to do when I want to do it. And I don't have to ask anyone for permission. Mm. So I think if you just think about just that one piece and think about that, you don't have to ask anyone to do anything. I remember recently my daughter, we have a third child now, she's 5. And I remember they were having show and tell day at preschool, and it was to bring in a piece of nature to preschool. Well, she had picked out a stick from our yard and she had forgotten it. And I dropped her off at preschool and I came back to the house and saw she left the stick. And I remember I gotta go bring up that back to preschool so she would have her piece of nature. And I remember seeing the stick sitting on my my seat in the van, bring it back to her, and just thinking in my mind, I wouldn't be able to do this if I was working full time or for someone else now. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be able to stop and bring her stick, you know? And so it's little things like that happen on a daily basis that you can do when you don't have to report to someone.
Because you're never getting that time back. I mean, as your kids get older, you realize you're never getting that time back. And it might seem so insignificant at the time, but you're telling that story and hopefully encouraging others. That's how significant that is. So that's powerful.
Yeah.
Well, it's a very cool story. You're a real person. You're very genuine. And I appreciate the fact that, it hasn't been perfect and you've had, some challenges and you got through them and you pushed through them and through perseverance. And I love the fact that you're applying what you've learned into this business. Now, because you're not busy enough, you and Brian Feifelter, good friend, have started some groups. And how did that come about? How did you meet Brian? And B, why the two types of groups that you have?
Okay, so Brian and I met through a Facebook group, and it was a group that people were just posting flips in. And I remember he was always posting Amazon flips for DVDs. And I remember I would buy every single flip he would ever post because they're always very good deals. And then we were both asked by Chris Green to be part of his Deals Done Right group as contributors to Deals Done Right. And so that was how we really met.
Okay.
Was the interaction that he had going on with all the different contributors for Deals Done Right. And so through the DDR, we had different people who were posting different things. You could post from any retail arbitrage, online arbitrage. It was a conglomerate of any kind of arbitrage opportunities for Amazon. Well, Brian and I just always were posting things from TJ Maxx, Marshalls, Ross, Burlington, and we were, I could just tell that we were very like-minded in how we already sourced. And for different reasons, we decided Chris decided to not continue DDR. And it went on for about 7 months, like January through July of 2015. And so when that decided to close, I contacted Brian and I said, hey, we already shop at these stores. We already have the audience from DDR who a lot of them want to continue in a type of a BOLO group. I said, why don't we do our own group and just try it out? But let's be specific in the stores that we're going to post from. So we chose to do, to try to do two Facebook groups. One focuses on just TJ, our retail arbitrage from TJ Maxx and Marshalls. The other one focuses on retail arbitrage from Ross and Burlington Coat Factory. And we split them up that way because you pretty much can find TJ Maxx and Marshalls all over the country. And Ross is not the same, and Burlington are not the same. They're regional. So we've been doing that since August of 2015.
That's a long time. It's a long time.
It is. And we've pretty much, we grow a little bit each month. Not everyone stays, and we actually don't really expect people to stay. We're more teaching people how to shop the stores and to be able to one day do it on their own, but do it with the methods that we're teaching them and how to shop the stores. So we limit our group based on zip code. So we that's something we learned from DDR. DDR was doing zip code restrictions. And so we will only allow one person in the group for every 10 stores within a 25-mile radius. So somewhere that might have 20 stores in a 25-mile radius, we would allow two people within that area, that city. So that's what's a little bit different about our groups, is that we make sure that the members can have enough stores to be able to find what we are posting in the groups.
That's awesome. And so basically the premise is like the other ones, where you basically say, hey, here's a jacket and you could buy it at this price, and here's what it's currently in the buy box for, and this is the rank and that kind of thing, correct? Something similar to that?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, correct. And we actually, and there was a software that was developed for DDR that we have been able to also use for our purposes, that we've been able to keep going.
Okay. And do you have a goal of how many posts a day or a week that you try to put out there in each of the groups?
We say a minimum of 100 per group per month, but we post at least 150 a month.
Okay.
We also have Kim and Perry Coughlin. They're really involved in the Scanner Monkey group, I know, but they're also contributors in our group, so they help us out too for those groups.
And so these are groups that there's a fee for. And so how much are the fees for these groups?
They're $100 per month per group. Or if you're in both groups, it's $180 per month.
Okay, so there's a discount if you choose to both of them. And right now you're accepting members as long as, again, which I think is a very clever, and I give Chris Green, of course, he's the clever one, right, that brought it with you. But it's to limit by zip code. And I think it's very smart. No, I think that's a very smart way around that. Instead of saying, hey, we're limiting it to 100 members and all of them just happen to live in Louisville, right, that would be a problem. You're limiting it to based on some real math and some reasonableness. And that's a reasonable way to look at it. And that gives me confidence that, hey, I have an opportunity as long as I decide to do the hustle. You know, and I'll have links to that. Elizabeth's going to send me the links if you're interested in that. I'll put them on my site, and you just shoot her a note and do whatever for them, because they're both just great people, and I know them both personally. You know, one of the other conversations you and I had, and I just think it's such a great story that I want to close with it, about relationships. And you and I were just at an event, and there were 80 people roughly, all large sellers, all competitors in some way, yet we're kindred spirits in many ways, because we all, I mean, just think about the conversations. You know, you couldn't talk to your spouse for that many hours about your business, right? I mean, that would, his eyes would probably roll back in the back of his head and curl over. But yet you were able to have deep conversations, real deep, meaningful conversations. And I'm sure it wasn't only business. It moves outside of there. But I love the story that you're in the Louisville market. And one of our good friends, Mitchell Lip, is in that market. And he's a mega seller. And yet you guys coexist in that market. And you do more than coexist. Is you have a relationship in some ways. I just think that is a story that, to me, it says something about both of you guys. But it says something that while you're competitors, you can coexist and kind of help each other sometimes.
Correct. I mean, we definitely are competitors, and he's a very nice guy. And it, I think it's also, it's just a way to let people know that, you know, you can get along with somebody and still, you know, exist in the same market. Yeah, for example, I mean, we both use the same prep center in Cincinnati. And I have my own warehouse, but I also use the prep center for certain things. And a couple times he has messaged me saying, hey, I'm headed up to the prep center. Do you have anything you want me to take with me? So, yeah, we definitely will work together in those kind of things. We don't send each other BOLO lists or anything like that.
All right, because you want to buy it before he does. I get it. That's where the competition, but that makes it fun. To me, that's part of the fun.
Yeah. And then there was another example I was telling you about that I think when we were talking this weekend, one of our local retail stores kicked me out. and also on top of that, I tried to place an online store pickup order and they saw my name on it and canceled the order. So I sent my order over to Mitch and I said, hey, I was like, these things are at Target. If you want to go pick them up, here's my list. So that was in December, you know, went at Q4. So yeah, you definitely can coexist in the same market as your competition.
But it's a quid pro quo, meaning that you give, now you're not giving with expectation, but you have also benefited. Fair? Is that a fair way to say it?
Definitely. Yeah. And I know that if I ever need anything, I'm sure that I could call him up and, you know, he would help me out.
Yeah, that's awesome. Sure. I just think that's such a great story. And I love ending it there because those relationships, let me place this out there and see if you would agree with this. My opinion, that my business and my friend's business have grown because of the relationships in the business the most. That's the most influential thing that has happened in our business is the relationships we develop with sellers like you and sellers like all the other rest of the people in our circles, which are now in the thousands. Is that fair for you too?
Yes, for sure. It's amazing the networking that has happened because of Facebook. I mean, everyone I know, I think that I have met other Amazon sellers is because of Facebook groups, which, you know, that didn't even exist, you know, 8 years ago. So yeah, I definitely agree that,
love it.
The relationships are key to this journey.
Okay, so before you give me that genius idea you're going to give us, I want you to remember you're going to send me the links for your groups for TJ Maxx and Marshall or Ross and Burlington if someone's interested, and I'll pop the links on here to help you guys out any way I can. So, you know, the goal of this podcast is to help people move forward, and you've really done a great job of it on your own. Give us a tip or a trick or something that you think somebody can take and put into their business that will help them get past that point of stuck.
I would say that my biggest tip, and I feel like I tell all the people about this a lot, is the app I use for sourcing. I use Scampower's app, and I know that, you know, a lot of people compare it to the other scouting apps out there. But it really is the one that has all the bells and whistles. It costs more, but it's because it has more bells and whistles. I work with Paul Rutherford to help him develop parts of the app, and I'm getting no kickback on this for saying this at all. But if you're doing retail arbitrage for shoes and clothing, it's a must have to step up your game because of the features that it has on there to help you make better decisions when you're in a store and making those buying decisions. So that would be my biggest piece of advice is what I use every day on a daily basis to make buying decisions for our business.
And I will second that because I'm a Scampower user too. I always have been. Just always have. So,
man, yeah, I always have been too. I always have been.
I appreciate you taking the time. I know you got so much going on in your life and you're just getting back from a big trip. But I appreciate it. And again, I love the story because I love the choice that you made because it was right for you. And this isn't judgment on anybody who chooses the other way. You know, whatever you choose, as long as it's right for you. And this just seems to be such a natural thing for you. And man, I wish you nothing but continued success. Can't wait to see you again. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Stephen.
Take care. If you're serious about private label and getting into private label and advancing with private label very, very quickly, here's a great opportunity. And there's only 9 slots left. So it's not like, hey, think about it. This is a pull the trigger if you're in and get in fast. It's Amazing Freedom Private Label Retreat in Breckenridge, Colorado, May 19th. Through the 22nd of 2017. You're responsible for your airfare to get to Denver and your way home. That's what you have to worry about. The rest is taken care of. All transportation, all meals, all housing. Oh, the house? It's a 15,000 square foot home. Yep, 15,000 square foot home. First class meals catered by an executive chef on site. He will make it right there for you. We've got private label 101 to 10001. I mean, it's everything you need. Finding products, bringing products to market. It's one-on-one personal training. It's a handful of people. There's only 9 slots left. Andy Slammons, Nate Slammons, Leron Hirschkorn will be there to help you be successful. This is not cheap, but it is advanced and it's compressed into a couple days. Here's the other great thing. Andy's going to partner with you on a couple products while you're there. So you have an opportunity to get into the private label game with Andy. If you're interested, there's no time to wait because there's only 9 slots left. AmazingFreedom.com/retreat. AmazingFreedom.com/retreat. So, is your life messy? Do things happen outside of your control? And have you been thinking about what you want your lifestyle business to be? Well, I think this is a good example of what can be. Take a smart person and a good marriage to a good, you know, as a couple making decisions, some kids that you want to be with and really enjoy, and in her case, go to a field trip. You know, those are powerful things that some people don't have the fortunate times in their lives that they can do that. Well, that's not happening for her and her husband, and it's intentional. And I really hope you hear that. ecommercemomentum.com. Hey, check out their group, their 2 sourcing groups, TJ Maxx and Marshalls as one, or Ross and Burlington, Co-Factor, if that's what you're interested in. I love the idea of the limited zip codes that they got from Chris Green. I think that's just so smart. Brian Freifeld, her partner, is just a great guy. And I think that would suit you well if you're interested in that. ecommercemomentum.com.
Thanks for listening to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.